Welcome to the program for Wednesday, February 29th, 2012, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It is Leap Day on In Depth with Francis Rose and Pentagon Solutions every Wednesday in the 3 o'clock hour, including Leap Day. We take a deep dive into the issues that the Pentagon is dealing with, and we talk to experts on defense issues both inside the Pentagon and outside, and trying to find answers, solutions to some of the challenges the Pentagon is dealing with. The budget, of course, is one of those, and dealing with financial matters. And my guest today on Pentagon Solutions is Al Tucker. He's executive director of the American Society of Military Comptrollers. And Al, it's a pleasure to have you back on the program. It's always great to see you.
Thank you, Francis.
I don't think there's a bigger issue the Pentagon is wrestling with than managing money right now. We're in the midst of budget season, and I imagine you've been following the hearings at Secretary Panetta that General Dempsey has been testifying before. And, of course, you're the person you succeeded at ASMC, Bob Hale, is with them as they go to the Hill. What are you seeing and hearing? What's striking you when it comes to the financial management element of what you're hearing?
Well, I think it's not only that the 2013 budget that the president submitted has many difficult decisions in it that are they're not feel good for many people on the Hill, particularly legislators, particularly in the investment programs and so forth. But it's the specter of sequestration that, of course, the secretary has spoken of as being a meat axe, being a nightmare, being a basically a fool's way to treat the budget. But there's no discussion about what to do about that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the ball's in the Congress's court. It's certainly not in the department's court. Although the president has made some recommendations about how to deal with sequestration in his 2013 budget. Mm-hmm. But there's no movement on that. Essentially a sort of Damocles hanging over the head of the Department of Defense, as well as many other civilian agencies.
There's two elements of that conversation about sequestration that I wonder about. First of all is the way that it's being described, and you mentioned some of the words that Secretary Panetta has used to describe it. So first of all, I wonder if that's an accurate portrayal of what sequestration potentially could do at the Defense Department. And second of all, I wonder if that's an effective way of portraying it to the members of Congress who are ultimately responsible for it either happening or not happening.
Well, that's a great question, Francis. I think ideology gets caught up in this a lot, depending on which side of the aisle people are sitting on. I've seen some people, now I'm talking about the Congress, I'm not talking about the department, have said, it's only an 8% cut of the Department of Defense, and compared to other defense programs around the world, it'd still be 10 times the equivalent of the next 10 lower countries.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, sequestration means to a number of the members of Congress or people that, you know, there's going to be less force levels. There's going to be less procurement. Procurement means jobs, mm-hmm, in their districts. So if sequestration comes about, there's going to be major impacts upon them in their districts. So it's not easy for them to accept.
Secretary Panetta said to just about every committee he appeared before something that I don't think anybody really agrees with, and that statement was, we're not planning for sequestration at all. We're not doing anything to prepare for it because we assume it's not going to happen. I'm not going to ask you to comment on whether you think Secretary Panetta was really meant what he said or not. But talk about the mechanics of preparing for something like sequestration. And if you were in that position of having to try to plan potentially for what could happen, how do you go about even doing that if we agree that it's a bad idea to just say, well, we'll just lop 8% off across the board on everything?
Well, if you were going to do it, and I accept Secretary Panetta's statement that they're not doing it, but if you were going to do it, you would have to do not a quadrennial review, but certainly a review of the threat again.
Mm-hmm.
And what force levels you will need to meet that threat, because you're going to reduce force levels, and you're going to take more risk. And I think that's what the department is saying, that at the budget that the president has submitted does not take unsustainable risk.
You mentioned a quadrennial review, and the last QDR was done and released in early 2010.
Yeah.
So it we're about halfway due until right. The next one.
Yeah.
Still, given the fact that the major conflicts that we've been involved with, the major defense operations have been Iraq and Afghanistan, yeah. We have some roll-down opportunities potentially there. So it doesn't strike me as totally unreasonable that you could maybe go back and refer to the one that's in place now as at least a framework for trying to understand how to implement sequestration, or do things change sufficiently in any two-year period, let alone the two-year period we've experienced, that's not practical?
Well, I would think it would be a starting point. I don't think you would have the time to start de novo all over again.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that would be a starting point, and you would have to make – because if sequestration happens – or if there's some opportunity that the Congress offers for planning, it's going to be a very short time frame. Sequestration happens on the 2nd of January, 2013.
Mm-hmm. The that's part of the concept that I think is maybe driving some of this discomfort with the idea at the Pentagon. It strikes me that maybe the response from Secretary Panetta might be a little different if the date was January 2 of 14 or 15. Is that fair, or is this just process-wise, is this so difficult that no matter what the date was, it's really undesirable, do you think?
Well, I'm pretty sure from Secretary Panetta's view that would be true. Providing more time for it might be an option. Certainly the Congress, since the Congress has control of the law, has lots of options. It could simply eliminate sequestration. It could extend it to another year or 2 years away. It could change the distribution between from 50-50 to 60-40 or something. Or it could come up with what the supercommittee failed to do, which is cuts to other programs that are not discretionary programs,
mm-hmm.
that are entitlement programs. Or finally, it could accept the president's proposal, which would be, as I understand it, would be to increase taxes on people who have greater income to avoid sequestration.
You mentioned something there that a possibility that I hadn't really heard or considered before, and that's the possibility of a delay in sequestration. And I just off the top of my head, I'm hearing a bunch of different voices in my brain saying, giving reasons why that might work. That's something for us to think about and maybe talk about a little bit more. You can take a break and come back in a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest on Pentagon Solutions today is Al Tucker. He's Executive Director of the American Society of Military Comptrollers. And we'll continue our conversation on In-Depth with Francis Rose in a minute.
Meeting mission goals through IT modernization, brought to you by General Dynamics IT.
The Air Force wants to know if commercial cellular networks might be the way forward for its wireless communication needs. The service is trying to collapse several of its legacy wireless networks that it says are becoming too costly and too cumbersome to operate. The Command and Control Integration Center has just started testing the 4G wireless networks of the four largest national cellular carriers. They're also testing next-generation handheld devices running both Android and Apple's iOS.
General Dynamics IT delivers the full strength of enterprise IT to drive innovation like infrastructure consolidation and modernization, cross-domain information sharing, cloud computing, Web 2.0, and a constant flow of new applications and IT services. General Dynamics IT helps government, military, and commercial organizations achieve new levels of productivity and mission effectiveness. General Dynamics IT brings together the expertise, technology, and best practices to deliver secure enterprise IT solutions. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
Arming your home security system gives you peace of mind, but are you paying $30, $40, $50 or more in monitoring fees? Switch to Ackerman Security Systems, the metro area's most trusted name in security, and pay just $18.95 a month. That's right, $18.95 a month, and no cost to switch. Don't have a system? Then Ackerman offers the latest technology, including wireless monitoring. Call by Wednesday and get 3 months of basic monitoring free when you switch or start service with Ackerman. Call 888-999-1070, AckermanSecurity.com.
It's about smiles. It's about laughter. It's about going out and making a difference in the life of a child. You don't have to get mad. You just have to go mad. GoMad2011.com is a website dedicated to supporting the Make-A-Wish Foundation. At GoMad, our mission is simple, to go out and make a difference. So how can you help? Visit the Wish Wall on GoMad2011.com and make a contribution today. Or find out how you can donate with a simple text message. Do it now so that we can continue to touch the lives of children with life-threatening conditions by granting their wishes.
And now the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
When agencies are trying to squeeze all the pennies they can, should they still be paying for contractors' retirement benefits? A taxpayer advocacy group says resoundingly no, at least not if contractors insist on offering pension plans. In a new report, Citizens Against Government Waste says the practice, which has been standard for years, is growing too costly. As pension costs rise, agencies could begin for a tenfold increase in payments for their contractors' retirement benefit.
The beginning of another year is one of the best times to review the state of your financial affairs. Unfortunately, many individuals overlook one of the most important aspects of their financial plan, life insurance. WEPA, a nonprofit association, provides a free online protection quiz and needs analysis worksheet to help you determine if your family has the right amount of life insurance coverage. Visit WAEPA.org to learn more. Once again, that's WAEPA.org.
Tom Temin here with a preview of tomorrow's Federal Drive. The administration is turning its attention to federal grants and reforming how they're handed out and tracked. Controller Danny Werfel will explain the emerging new approach. Plus, Defense launches a program to increase security of expeditionary forces by reducing their fuel and energy needs. Those stories and more tomorrow morning, starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Al Tucker, the Executive Director of the American Society of Military Comptrollers, my guest on Pentagon Solutions today. We talked a little bit about sequestration, a lot about sequestration in the first part of the program. But that is just one of the challenges on the landscape for Bob Hale and for everybody else in financial management at DOD. Another big one is auditability. And you and I have talked about auditability before. Remind me, the deadline for 2014 is what?
You have to assert that you are ready for audit on your statement of budgetary resources in 2014, which would mean that you would begin an audit of your statement of budgetary resources for FY15.
What document is the statement of budgetary resources? What information does that contain?
Statement of budgetary resources is one of the five financial statements in the suite of financial statements that have to be prepared by agencies of the government. Essentially, what the statement of budgetary resources is tells you how much money Congress gave you in basically budget authority or author appropriations, how much of it you have obligated, Now, you've promised people you'd buy so certain things and so forth, and how much you've actually paid out or expended, and what's left.
Okay.
What's left in unobligated balances, what's left in obligated but unexpended balances.
All right, so you mentioned that's one of five. In the next segment, I'll quiz you about the other four. I'll have you list the other four. So give you some time to noodle on that one a little bit. Is there significance to that one being chosen as the first one that the Pentagon has to have ready, or is that just the first in progression when you're trying to do an audit, or how does that work?
No, the Department feels that statement is one of the most relevant financial statements to what it actually does and to particularly to its relationship with the Congress, because the Congress holds the purse strings, the Congress appropriates the money, and the Department has always felt that one of its first financial obligations is to abide by the strictures that Congress establishes for appropriations. And so keeping track of appropriations, obligations, unexpended balances is primary duty for the Department of Defense financial management community.
The Defense Department was stood up in August of 1949, and my understanding is that we've never had auditable books at DOD. Is that correct?
I believe that's true. You might be able to go back into the early 1800s and find audits although audits were very different then. And so I think the earlier books of the country were audited in those early days. I don't know what they did during the Civil War and how, but certainly in the modern sense from modern auditing, which began about 1900 or so, no.
Maybe at some point you and I can have a conversation about how auditing has changed, but I think maybe we'll do that off the air. I'm not sure that a lot of folks in the audience would enjoy that conversation as much as I would. Is it just the sheer complexity of the agency that has prevented auditability from happening before, or are there other forces at work here, no pun intended, that have made this difficult or impossible over the years?
Oh, it's a combination of things, Francis. Certainly the size and the complexity of the department and its dispersion is one part of it. Another part is that systems were not designed for auditing transactions end to end in many cases. They were designed to control obligations and expenditures. So systems have to be changed. Procedures also have got to be changed because of there's so many systems and so many ways that data are accumulated and not in standard ways. And then the other thing are there needs to be a discipline in actually executing financial transactions and often because people are, you know, they're pushed, there are deadlines, there are war fighters waiting, the discipline is not there. Mm-hmm. Now, I call it discipline. Accountants, we call it internal controls.
Uh-huh.
You have to do the same thing the right way every day.
Mm-hmm. And if we're at a point, now it's starting to become a little more clear. If we're at a point where we're establishing and trying to lay that framework over an organization of the complexity of the Department of Defense from scratch, essentially, then now it starts to crystallize in my mind a little bit more why that's so difficult. Am I headed the right direction
there?
Well,
you are. And then the one thing I haven't mentioned is that some of the accounting standards that we use in the private sector are while they are they have a lot of utility in the private sector and commercial accounts, don't have a lot of utility in the Department of Defense. Depreciation is not an issue in the Department of Defense when you're deciding to buy another weapon system or buy equipment. You know, you don't ask, well, how many years of depreciation do I have on this aircraft carrier?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But that concept of what something is worth over the life of it seems to be something that, especially with this budget, people are paying a lot more attention to, I think.
Absolutely. There's a cost. There's a initiative called cost management, or cost awareness, mm-hmm. cost culture, trying to get people to be much more aware of costs, manage costs, get more cost information as opposed to obligational information and expenditure information.
And it's an interesting situation because a lot of folks that I talk to in industry are saying that there's kind of a dual track here. One track is that the DOD is trying to be more sensitive about life cycle costs and looking for value in over the entire life of weapon systems or whatever. And at the same time, and many times, as you well know, that requires incursion of some higher costs up front for savings through the tail of the life cycle. At the same time, the budgets are shrinking, and it becomes less and less easy for the agency to justify a heavy upfront cost to save a little bit further out.
Well, that's true. Life cycle costing has been around a long time. But as any budgeteer will tell you, it can often get run over in the fact that I have to put a budget together this year. It must fit within a certain size and certain parameters that are set up by the administration or maybe the Congress. I don't have the latitude. Maybe I don't have the control over some of the elements of life cycle costs that I would need in order to bring life cycle realization of life cycle savings to bear.
Now, one mechanism that the Defense Department has had for many years to deal with that is the supplemental budget. And we'll talk a little bit about the trends that you're seeing there when we come back from the break. And I'm going to quiz you on those other four documents that people need to know about besides the Statement of Budgetary Resources when we come back. Al Tucker is the Executive Director of the American Society of Military Comptrollers, and we'll continue our conversation in just a second on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
Tune in to General Jim Jones, former National Security Advisor, General Chuck Wold, Subject Matter Specialist in International Security Policy, and the Honorable Tom Davis, former Virginia Congressman and Chairman of the House Government Reform Committee, as they discuss the impact of the recently announced budget reductions on the new defense strategy. Tune in to Deloitte's Fed Central, Wednesday, March 7th and 21st at 11:30 a.m. on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m. to learn more.
The Federal IT Challenge is a series exploring the administration's aim to fundamentally change how the federal government purchases and uses IT, and a discussion around one of the biggest goals, reducing the number of federal data centers by at least 40% by 2015. During the show, Doug Bourgeois, Vice President and Federal Chief Cloud Executive for VMware, commented,
"Virtualization abstracts the operating system and the data from the device. It provides a certain amount of agility and flexibility from a technological standpoint. Using virtualization and virtual desktop infrastructure to liberate the data from the endpoint device and bring it into the private cloud, that's key. The data in particular, it provides so much more flexibility for multiple devices to be mobile and geographically disparate and still have access to that data."
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword VMware.
Please join Jim Fleisig on Tuesday, March 6th at 12 noon for his monthly series, The Federal Executive Forum. This month will be a CIO roundtable discussing secure information and intelligence sharing, live from the 2012 AFSIA Homeland Security Conference. Jim's guests will be from DOD, DOJ, and DNI. Don't miss the Federal Executive Forum. Tuesday, March 6th at 12 noon on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Sponsored by the AFSCEA Homeland Security Conference.
Screening early and often. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. If you screen regularly for certain cancers, doctors will be able to better detect and treat cancer. But many people don't get the screenings, according to new data from the National Health Interview Survey. Mary White is at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Not all Americans are getting the recommended cancer screenings for breast, cervical, and colorectal cancers.
Depending on your gender and age, the recommendations can be different. For instance,
most women aged 50 to 74 years should be screened for breast cancer with a mammogram every 2 years, and women aged 21 to 65 years should be screened for cervical cancer with a Pap test at least every 3 years.
The study is in the CDC's Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
Diary entry, August 15th. My joints ache. Today I can hardly move. I need some answers.
September 3rd. I'm tired all the time. What's going on?
June 8th. I woke up with a rash on my face. I want to know why.
For answers, ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
FederalNewsRadio.com, your one-stop shop for all things federal. Listen daily to interviews with federal managers and government contractors. Read Mike Causey's daily federal report, or just stop by for an update on the latest news affecting the federal community. FederalNewsRadio.com, your source for federal news now.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today it's Pentagon Solutions in the 3 o'clock hour. Every week in this series, we take a look at issues the Pentagon is dealing with and talk about potential solutions. My guest today is Al Tucker. He's Executive Director of the American Society of Military Comptrollers. And, of course, we're talking about the budget challenges the Pentagon is dealing with. We talked about the Statement of Budgetary Resources. That's the document that the Pentagon has to prepare by 2014 to suit Congress. And you mentioned that was one of five, and now it is quiz time. What are the other four documents?
All right. Well, I may fail this quiz, Francis, because I can't remember the exact names. But the general, I know one is the balance sheet, or okay. Sometimes called the Statement of Financial Position, mm-hmm. that shows what the assets, the liabilities, and the equities of the department are. And that would contain the, you know, what do I have in the way of plant, property, and equipment? What do I have in receivables? From other sources of income, from other sources, and then on my liability side, what do I have in payables, what do I have in long-term liabilities, and the net would be the equity position. I've really squished that down to a simple explanation. And then you have the cash flow statement. It's different than the than the Statement of Budgetary Resources. But basically, what was my cash in the Treasury accounts, mm-hmm. and how was it used, and what increased my cash and what decreased my cash, and what is my cash balance now?
Okay.
Then you have a statement on internal management controls, which the auditors come to an opinion about the statement of internal management controls and whether they are adequate or not.
Okay.
And then finally you have, and this is where I'm a little shaky, the equivalent of an income statement, which is, and I don't know if I can characterize it quite properly, but it's, where the money came from, where it went.
Okay.
So that's five. And the good news for you with this test is I wouldn't know if you were correct or not. So
hopefully I have some listeners who know when I've made bunches of mistakes. They will tell me.
I'm going to rely on the wisdom of the audience to correct you on that. But those documents are the collection of documents Pentagon has to have ready by 2017.
That's
is that
right.
Correct?
That's correct. The goal is to get a clean opinion on all five of those statements by 2017.
From your experience and based on the knowledge that you have of what is involved, what goes into producing all of those, this is a deadline that slipped. I don't know how many times now. I'm aware of twice.
Oh, more than
and
that.
It's many more than that.
I could probably give you more than that. Yeah.
Is this time for sure? I mean, it's the old line from the cartoon. Are we likely to see it this time, do you think?
This is a tough mountain to climb. And I think the department's been trying to climb this mountain for a number of years, and they've set goals and targets. And the goals and the targets have helped them over time get closer and closer and closer. The 2017 goal will help them get closer, and they'll work hard toward it. If they don't make it, I don't expect them to give up.
I expect them to
continue on. I don't expect the Congress to give up on the act itself. So can they make it by 2017? I'm loath to venture an opinion on that, frankly.
And that sounds like something an auditor would say. And I appreciate that. I guess what would be maybe even more informative than that is if you see at least a narrowing of the gap between where they are and where they need to go to be able to do that. Because there was a sense for a long time, for many years in the 80s, 90s, and so on, that there was not even the space between where the Pentagon was and auditability was so great that it wasn't even any sense to try to gauge it.
Absolutely will narrow the gap. Once they start these audits of the Statement of Budgetary Resources and start seeing, as they look deeper and deeper into the organization, the problems I've mentioned about systems, about procedures, about adherence to procedures, about internal controls, they will begin a tightening process.
Mm-hmm.
And that tightening process, while everything they tighten up, because will improve all of these other functions. Now, there are still some outstanding issues that controller has pointed out. One of them, of course, is evaluation of weapon systems,
mm-hmm.
and whether existence and completeness is more important than the evaluation of the weapon system.
Mm-hmm.
And also environmental liabilities. And then there's something called intergovernmental transactions between them, which are obstacles,
mm-hmm.
as well.
Yeah. So is it fair to characterize this 2014 deadline for the Statement of Budgetary Resources as kind of a breakthrough? If they get to that, whether it's 2014 or 15 or whatever, once you get to that point, is that going to be a catalyst, do you think, toward making the next step to full auditability? Is that like a big deal?
Well, remember, it's the assertion.
Yeah. Okay.
In 2014.
Okay.
The actual execution of the audit, I believe, starts in 2015.
Okay.
It's the execution of the audit that will begin to demonstrate additional problems that need to be corrected.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what will work.
But I guess just the fact that we get to, it sounds to me, as an outside observer, that if we get to that point, just getting to that point is a significant accomplishment to feeling like the light at the end of the tunnel is not an oncoming train.
Well, that's right, because what it means to make the assertion, it means they will have had to have done a lot of their own internal investigations, their own internal, which I know are going on now,
mm-hmm.
evaluations prior to the auditors getting there. And so having reached the point where they believe they can make the assertion will indicate that they've done a lot of work on their own to satisfy themselves that the processes are in place.
Al Tucker is my guest. He's executive director of the American Society of Military Comptrollers. When we come back, let's chat a little bit about the other Pentagon budget, the or source at least, and that's the supplemental, or it's now called, I guess the old hands like us call it the supplemental still, but it's referred to as the OCO now.
OCO, Contingency Operations.
Let's talk about that a little bit and what you're seeing there, because there's definitely a trend there, and we'll do that when I come back with Al Tucker on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose.
At Kaiser Permanente, we're about keeping you connected. So we made My Health Manager. It connects you to your doctor, your prescriptions, your test results, and your health records right at home. But what if you aren't home? What if you're visiting family, or at the beach, or on a business trip? What if you're on a steep mountain trail, you know, with loose gravel and one way in and one way out? Now, there's the Kaiser Permanente mobile app. It connects you right from your smartphone. You can email your doctor while visiting family, refill your prescription from the beach, take your medical records on a business trip, or schedule, say, a little checkup from that steep trail. No matter where you are, we'll keep you connected without keeping you from any of life's adventures. Get the app by searching Kaiser Permanente in the Android market or bookmark kp.org on your smartphone. Coming soon to the Apple App Store, Kaiser Permanente. Thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852. Apple is the registered trademark of Apple Inc. Android is a trademark of Google Inc.
Do you know someone who's done something outstanding in the field of human capital management? Nominate them for Federal News Radio's third annual Causey Awards. Together we'll call attention to what may be a best practice in government. Anyone can be nominated, career, political, and contractors working in the HR field. The award is named after Federal News Radio senior correspondent Mike Causey and his lifelong dedication to the reporting of management and federal pay and benefits issues. To nominate someone for the Causey Awards, go to federalnewsradio.com, search Causey Award.
Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Hear from the top of the food chain on how your agency is using technology today. Tech Tuesday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Hear from the top of the food chain on how your agency is using technology today. Tech Tuesday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, Pentagon Solutions every Wednesday in the 3 o'clock hour, where we talk to people from both inside and outside the Pentagon about the issues that they're dealing with and how to potentially deal with those issues, try to find solutions, of course. Al Tucker, the executive director of the American Society of Military Comptrollers, is my guest. And one of the things that's come up a number of times over the last week or so that Secretary Panetta and General Dempsey and Comptroller Hale, Secretary Hale, have been before the various committees is the OCO, the Overseas Contingency Operations Budget, formerly known as the Supplemental Budget. A lot of speculation about where that's headed, and I'm sure you're seeing the same trend lines we are. The last information that I saw was that it's going to $88.5 billion this year, down from $115 billion. Last year. It's been substantially higher than that. Are we ever going to get to a point where you think that goes away and the money that's there is rolled into the regular DOD budget?
Theoretically, that should happen because the Overseas Contingency Operations Budget is for essentially ongoing operations that the department knows it will have to be involved in due to deployment against threats.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when the number comes down to a smaller number, which we would hope that would happen somewhere around 2014 or 2015. There'll still be some people deployed in threat situations and such, and there may be an OCO budget for that, but it could be small enough, pardon me, to be absorbed into the regular budget. But you know, whether that's 2014 or 2015 or 2016, I don't know.
How did that come about in the first place? How did we wind up with this extra separate pot of money?
Well, because budgeting basically from the time of Vietnam to early in the Iraq War, Desert Storm, Desert Shield, as well as Afghanistan, the department put together a budget each year without including the cost of going to war. Mm-hmm. Even though they knew they were going to war, they knew that war was going to continue, but they did not want to make that part of their budget. Maybe partly it's one of the reasons was because they did not want to say, well, you know, we're going to have to do this again next year.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened was that they would send a budget to Congress, and that budget would not have the necessary resources to maintain the troops in the field.
Mm-hmm.
And so everybody agreed, okay, we need to have more money, and that's a supplemental. Now, a supplemental becomes a vehicle for a lot of other riders.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fact that there was a known supplemental coming saves a lot of people time and effort to try to push it into the regular budget.
Yeah, it's easier to push stuff in there than it is to try to get it in a regular appropriation, and
exactly.
People don't pay as much attention. It's normally done. I seem to recall, especially early in the Iraq and Afghanistan conflicts, the supplemental would come out later on in the year,
yes,
when fewer
yeah.
people were paying attention to what might be in there.
Well, I mean, actually, you as soon as you submitted the budget, you started on the supplemental.
Right. So it was easy to kind of jam that.
I think the OCO comes about with President Obama's administration. I don't believe it was part of the Bush administration. So it would be an initiative that would be this administration's initiative.
You said something in there in our last piece of the conversation that struck me. One thing we haven't talked about that people are discussing in this budget environment is reversibility, the idea that we might cut it now, but we might want to try to bring it back later. Maybe we can wrap up our conversation, talk about that a little bit when we come back from the breakout. Your eyes are perking up.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
You like that idea. All right, well, let's talk about that when we come back from the break. My guest is Al Tucker. He is Executive Director of the American Society of Military Comptrollers on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
My advice to you, until they upgrade the system, simply turn off PhotoStream on your iPhone the next time you're in Vegas, and then it doesn't go anywhere.
Okay.
Or else, change your Vegas behavior, or else, don't take pictures while you're in Vegas. So now, once you've deleted all the photos in the PhotoStream, you've got to then go to the camera roll and delete those individuals.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
I'm Beyonce with an important message about hunger in America. Did you know 1 in 8 people struggle with hunger? Over 12 million children live in homes where there isn't always enough food. Food banks are experiencing more demand than ever. Show Your Helping Hand is a nationwide campaign with the goal of helping Feeding America deliver millions of meals to local food banks. Please join me in showing a helping hand to fight hunger. More information is available at showyourhelpinghand.com.
Giving you the edge on healthy living, here's Mayo Clinic Medical Edge.
Bunions. The name may sound a little funny, but they're no laughing matter. Bunions occur when the first metatarsal, the longest foot bone that leads to your big or great toe, turns toward the other foot. At the same time,
the great toe goes the other way. It pushes towards your fifth toe.
The result, says Mayo Clinic Dr. Stephen Kavros, is a bony bump on the inside of the foot at the base of the big toe. For some people, it can cause a lot of pain. Your choice of shoes can aggravate the problem. High heels or shoes with a tight toe box puts added pressure on the area. That's why the first line of treatment is
shoe therapy. Widen the toe box of the shoe, lower the heel of the shoe, then insert cushioning under the joint can potentially give you some symptomatic relief.
Surgery is only a consideration after all other treatment efforts fail. For more information, talk to your doctor or visit mayoclinic.org. I'm Vivian Williams.
Congratulations on landing the job. I'm really excited for you.
Thanks. How's your search going?
The job market's tight. I mean, I can barely get an interview.
Yeah.
And I've got student loans to deal with. You're lucky, you know. The National Guard paid your loans off.
Luck? The Guard was a smart decision, one you can still make.
The National Guard Student Loan Repayment Program can pay up to $50,000 of your existing student loans. Get the details at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the D.C. National Guard, aired by the Maryland, D.C. Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
The Federal News Radio Community Spotlight is Arena Stage. Join Arena Stage Artistic Director Molly Smith and Gala Chair WUSA9's J.C. Hayward at the Golden Gala on Monday, March 26, featuring Broadway sensation Kate Baldwin and honoring Senators Thad Cochran and Patrick Leahy. This enchanted evening of dining, dancing, and entertainment benefits arts education programs at Arena Stage. For more information, visit federalnewsradio.com. The Community Spotlight is brought to you by Papa John's and Federal News Radio.
We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's Pentagon Solutions today with my guest, Al Tucker. He is Executive Director of the American Society of Military Comptrollers. Before we wrap up, I don't think I've ever asked you in the number of times that you've been on the show to tell me who are members of ASMC and what you do, what your organization does.
The simple description, our professional society is made up of people who handle the money in the Department of Defense. They're accountants, they're auditors, they're budget people, they are financial managers, sometimes they're weapons systems, cost analysts, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And what we provide them is educational opportunities that will enhance their opportunity for career growth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what our role is.
We're going to put a link up later this afternoon at federalnewsradio.com to your group's website so people can find out more about you. I said before we went to the break that when I mentioned reversibility, your eyes perked up like I've never seen them. What is it about that concept that gets you going?
Well, I think it's unrealistic because let's take it from a government point of view. If you're building a program, you don't want to leave openings and loopholes for it to be reversed. So you want to get all of the resources and bring them in and control them and not leave them out there for somebody else to do it.
Mm-hmm.
If it's in the legislature, for instance, and if you make a decision, particularly one that is, because Congress likes to make decisions that benefit people, they don't like to make decisions that don't benefit people, it's difficult to take the benefits away.
Mm-hmm.
Difficult to reverse the benefits. It takes crisis to do that. And I think, for instance, the Bush tax cuts were done at a time when revenues were increasing, we had surpluses, it was a good time, and Congress decided to give the money back.
Mm-hmm.
Now when the situation has changed, logic might say, well, you know, we should undo that, we should reverse that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's going to be very, very difficult, and it's going to require crisis. I don't recognize reversibility as a strategy.
Reversibility, the way that I understand it from what the Pentagon's talking about, is the ability that if we'll cut program X, and if at some point we decide we do need that capability, we can reverse that cut and bring it back. And we want to construct some kind of mechanism whereby industry will be able to continue to provide us that capability. I'm not sure. It seems to me to and again, I'm yeah. not the brightest guy when it comes to this stuff, but either you're going to do it or you're not going to do it. And if you're not going to do it anymore, I'm not sure I understand why you want to revisit something at some point in time when and I'm also not sure I understand how you plan for that financially with the or if it even makes any difference.
Well, you know, let's take weapon systems procurement. We've all seen a lot of weapon systems programs, and we've seen them, you know, they start out with a goal, and the typical reaction is to reduce it because it costs too much. We need fewer planes, we'll get fewer ships and so forth. Only in the case of a crisis like we had in Iraq with our men and women dying from IEDs, mm-hmm. we went full out to develop the MRAP program, which I can't figure out what it stands for, but it's a very heavily armored and protected vehicle. But that was a new program. We didn't take a program that existed and decide to re-energize or re-inflate it.